14 days, 14 nights. 14 days the storm drove the ship across the Adriatic Sea. 14 nights, 276 people on that ship prayed to see another morning. The ship's captain had tried to race across the sea to Rome before the first winter storm arrived. They were only halfway there when winter's first storm caught up with them. No one dared light a fire to cook by, and no one could keep down any food anyway. For 14 days and 13 nights, 276 people did not eat. And on that 14th night, those people were falling apart. The sailors discovered that the storm had blown the ship near land. The sailors dropped the anchors before the ship could crash. Then, desperate to save their own lives, the sailors tried to escape the doomed ship. They lowered the lifeboat, ready to leave everyone else to their fate. Paul saw the sailors. He alerted the soldiers who cut loose the lifeboat, and the lifeboat floated away. Now they were all trapped, 276 people stuck on a ship that was too heavy to make it safely to shore. For 14 days and 13 nights, no one had eaten anything, and everyone was falling apart. This story comes near the end of the book of Acts, on Paul's final journey to Rome. It is sandwiched between a storm and a shipwreck. Sea travel in Paul's time was very dangerous. It is estimated that 1 in 5 sea travelers faced deadly danger during their journey. Not all of them made it back. Storms at sea showed up all over the songs and stories and histories of the peoples who lived around the Mediterranean. Both folks writing history and folks writing fiction use storms at sea to reveal someone's true character, who someone really is. And Luke does that in today's story, when Paul is one of 276 people who are trapped on a ship. After 14 days and 13 nights of storm, everyone is falling apart. I've never been trapped by a storm at sea, but I do remember a time when it felt like everything in my household was falling apart. Some of you in the congregation might remember this story. About 10 years ago, in October, my husband Joe went to the doctor's office to get his flu shot. He wanted to help out with Jack's preschool class, but he didn't want to help spread the flu. Now, in general, needles make Joe feel woozy. But this time after the shot, he felt no wooziness at all. Everything was just fine. Until he got into the elevator. As the elevator started to move, Joe passed out and fell over. He hit his head on the elevator wall on the way down. He hit it hard enough to leave a dent in the wall. Luckily, this happened at the doctor's office, so Joe didn't get a chance to shake it off and drive home. Paramedics took him straight to the hospital, where doctors found that Joe had broken his neck. Specifically, he broke his C2 vertebra, which sits right at the top of his spine. So if this is the C1 vertebra at the top, and this is the C2 vertebra, it has this little post that kind of slots in. That post is what Joe broke. It snapped right off, right next to his spinal cord. The doctors were able to perform surgery. They put a very snazzy titanium screw in his neck. This put the little post back together and kept it from floating off and severing the spinal cord. 2 days later, Joe came home with his neck in a brace and a whole lot of pain and healing to get through. So there we were at home with an active and creative 2-year-old, a 5-month-old baby who still wasn't sleeping through the night. Now I had a convalescing partner who was no longer sleeping through the night either, but couldn't really help with the kids. We all started to descend into a fog of exhaustion. Joe struggled with not being able to do much, and I struggled with everything I had to do. My seasonal depression began to kick in, and like on Paul's ship, things really started to fall apart. But let's get back to Paul on that ship. One of the 276 people who hadn't eaten for 14 days and 13 nights. What did Paul do on that 14th night. Paul had compassion on everyone. He provided encouragement. Paul took bread. He gave thanks to God in front of them all. Then he broke the bread and he began to eat. If this language of taking, breaking, and eating bread sounds familiar, it should. This is the same language that shows up in the stories of the feeding of the 5,000, the Last Supper, and the road to Emmaus. Those are all stories of uncertain situations where people are physically or spiritually exhausted or frightened. And Jesus alters those moments through the breaking of bread. Here too, God enters into a scary situation where people are exhausted through the breaking of bread. And Paul didn't just break bread in front of the Christians traveling with him. No. Paul urged everyone to eat. We see this pattern throughout Luke and Acts. Meals and fellowship expand who is welcome at God's table. Jesus eats with sinners and tax collectors. Paul eats with the soldiers who kept him prisoner and the sailors who tried to leave him for dead. Paul's life had been formed by God. And this story shows us who Paul truly is and what he is truly capable of. Paul cared for the people on board spiritually and physically. The text says everyone was encouraged. Other translations say people became cheerful. The King James says they were of good cheer. 276 people ate for the first time in 14 days. And from Paul's encouragement and care, folks came out of their hopelessness. They regained strength. They took action. They threw the ship's grain into the sea, and this lightened the ship. When morning came, the sailors could bring the ship just that much closer to shore. This morning, we will break bread together as we celebrate World Communion Sunday. In a world where many are physically or spiritually exhausted or frightened, Jesus is present in the breaking of bread. Communion time is a time to come together in remembrance of Jesus Christ. It is also a time of encouragement. World Communion Sunday reminds us that the church is bigger than our congregation, our conference, or our denomination. God calls many people, and many people around the world are shaped by God's love. We are part of that larger world, even as we sit here in this church. And it was this church that pulled us out of our own storm. This congregation of people whose lives have been shaped by God. Folks from this congregation prayed for us. They sent Joe cards. People called to check in. But most of all, people brought us meals. Less than 6 months after this congregation had fed us after Jim was born, people descended upon our home again with casseroles, salads, and pizzas. Sometimes they brought notes and prayers along with the cooking instructions. And all those filled our hearts as well as our stomachs. Those meals and all the love and care the church showed us helped pull me out of my fog. It gave me strength. And as I emerged from my fog, I realized how far down I had fallen and how little housework had gotten done. The dust bunnies and laundry were threatening to take over. I couldn't remember the last time I had properly washed the floors, and small handprints had appeared on a surprising number of surfaces. The church's care also gave me courage. A month or so in, I used that courage to ask for help cleaning my house. Over half a dozen women showed up at my house on a Saturday. They vacuumed and mopped, folded laundry, and cleaned and tidied. After I left, my house not only looked and felt cleaner, it felt full of God's love. The care and food that people in this church gave to us gave us strength and encouragement. One could even say that we were of good cheer, or at least better cheer. Joe continued to heal. The kids continued to grow. I was able to function as a wife and mother again. The handprints also still continued to appear. This church, though, sharing God's love, got us through the worst of it. May God continue to shape us all that we may continue to share God's love with those who need it. Thanks be to God.